Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Back, play Tessie, episode 299. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate 5 stars. At play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Sammy's here, Pat's here, Gordo's here. I'm in Africa right now doing a podcast. That's so weird.
It's 3 a.m. where Gordo's at right now. If he sounds a little bit different, it's because he's literally in Africa.
Dude, the intro music played and then it shot to us like as it was ending, and I was like, oh god, like did it sound super delayed?
Yeah. Oh. you seem very flustered when you saw yourself at 3 a.m.
This is gonna be off the rails. I feel like this is gonna be a wild one, Africa Gordo.
Yeah, you guys are like, I can hear you well, but you're slightly like visually glitching. Like I can tell this is gonna be a trip, but ready to rock. Like the Red Sox traded for Wilson Contreras. We weren't super positive about it. A lot of people got super mad at us for it. Like I had so many angry comments on my tweets, which I think it's fair. Like, the Red Sox got a really good player, and usually when the Red Sox get a really good player, like, almost every single time, you're going to be super jazzed up about it. Like, that's the way I am almost every single time the Red Sox get a really good player, but twice this offseason, they've gotten good players, and my first reaction hasn't necessarily been, like, LFG. It's been a little bit, well, okay, like, they got this good player, but, like, what was the caliber of guy they could have gotten? Like when they got Sonny Gray, it was like, okay, why is this not Joe Ryan? Why is this not Freddy Peralta? Why is this not one of the big free agents? When they get Wilson Contreras, it's like, okay, they could have had Pete Alonso. They are spending $17 million a year on Contreras. Could they have had a guy who is as good or better for just money? Like those are the things going through my head. Doesn't mean I don't like Wilson Contreras. I think he's going to be the type of emotional player that this team falls in love with, but that's just where my head went. Does not mean that I don't think he's going to be good for them. Like he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, it's much less the player compared to what it means for the outlook of the team. Like when the Red Sox got Sonny Gray, my initial reaction was there's no way that could be the number two starter. After that 2025 season, how well everything went, there's no way that their answer could be Sonny Gray. And then you see with Wilson Contreras, it's different because it wasn't so much, again, it wasn't the player. Wilson Contreras is a guy that we've all spoken highly about in a vacuum. It's just the way it went down. You miss out on Pete Alonso, who we all agreed was the most obvious, most elegant fit, him and Schwarber, but Alonso was the more realistic one. You pivot to Contreras, and we're like, okay, that's good. We like that. That's a good addition. Not exactly the guy we wanted first, but still a very good addition. And then you see the $8 million thing, and it just points to, you know, like you said, Gordo, the opportunity cost. You could have done it a different way. And it just seems like it's more John Henry saving money, fitting the roster under this budget. And it's not Yorker Fajardo I'm mad about the Red Sox losing. It's this style of operating. And I think that got lost on people, at least for my comment section, which was also pretty peeved from play Tessie listeners saying like, this is a good addition. Why are you being negative? Who cares about your 10th best prospect or whatever? That's not the point. The point is when you operate like this, it makes winning harder. How many times have we said a big budget is just margin for error. And the Red Sox just, they don't want to, as Bradfo says, flex that financial might.
Yeah, I think, and this is coming from the guy who, I was all over Contreras for what felt like months. Like, I am a huge Wilson Contreras fan. I am very excited that Wilson Contreras is a member of the Red Sox. I think he'll do great. I think the monster is only going to help him. He had an insane jump in in-air pull rate this year, which, I mean, that's Monster City. I was more down on the way they went about it more than anything. I'm not down on Contreras. I'm not upset they got Contreras. Yeah, like, in a perfect world, John Henry spends every penny he has and they get Pete Alonso, which, whatever. But it does just feel like they're at the point where they're kind of settling, which is frustrating. And again, that's not a knock on Contreras. I think Contreras is going to be great. He's a great clubhouse guy, will be a great mentor to Carlos Narvaez. He's great at first base. I have no concerns about the carryover of Wilson Contreras to Boston. It's the fact that you're giving up a little bit of surplus just to save a couple of ones in the wallet. But that being said, like, I am excited. The team is unequivocally better than they were 2-3 days ago, whenever it was, compared to when we were recording. So the team is better. I'm not a fan of how they went about it. I'm happy he's a Red Sox. I just wish they would spend money.
I agree, Pat. The team is definitely better. I don't think that's even debatable. This is assuming they bring back Alex Bregman, by the way. I feel like we speak about the Red Sox as if Alex Yes. Bregman is a foregone conclusion. I just don't think that there's any other place Bregman's going to go. So I'll continue to operate like that until proven otherwise. If that is... Pat, what's up?
No, you're good.
Okay. If this is what happens, think back to the day the Red Sox got eliminated by the Yankees. We're all upset and then, you know, go to sleep, wake up, and we kind of have a clear head. All right. You know, sad the season's over, but the future is bright. What would you guys have said if I traveled to the future and then came back and told you guys, hey, for 2026, the number two starter is going to be Sonny Gray? What would your reaction have been?
Well, that's part of why my headspace has been what it is because I can see into our future. Because there was going to be three, it felt like, if they played their cards right, three real moves to make here. And one was going to be bringing back Bregman or a Bregman equivalent like Bo Bichette or Marte or whatever. And then there was going to be the bat addition. And then there was going to be the number two starter addition, assuming Giolito leaves. So it's his replacement. And Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras both feel like they're at the bottom of what would be maybe acceptable, maybe Sonny Gray below that and Wilson Contreras a little bit higher on that ranking. But like, if the Red Sox were going to go below your expectation on one of them, you'd want them to exceed your expectation on the other. And so that's what's scary is because like, if they go and bring Alex Bregman back, we're going to be super excited. But in the end, if that's your big three of the offseason, Bregman, Sonny, Contreras, yeah, it's like it's compared to where we thought at the beginning of the offseason. You can't say it's anything else but underwhelming. Doesn't mean they're not good players, but yeah.
We were talking Joe Ryan, Pete Alonso, and bring back Bregman. Like that's exactly. Not, this is not even, yeah. And I know people will throw the metrics and everything. They'll throw the whole kitchen sink at you with reasons to say this is close. There's nothing that's convincing me. Like Pete Alonso is a middle of the order monster. Wilson Contreras is very good, but the power difference is significant. Sonny Gray, I know with some tweaks, he can be better, and he's better than his numbers say. He's a very good pitcher, but he's not Joe Ryan. He doesn't have the upside of Joe Ryan, who continues to improve, by the way. He doesn't have Freddy Peralta, you know, upside, 2.7 ERA. Gordo?
It's also the age factor. Like, these guys both, you know, you talk about under the hood good seasons, but it's like they're going to be 34 and 36. So, right. Like, yes, they hopefully will do the same thing. Like, you're putting them, you'd think, in a better position for both of them, better ballpark, better team. Like, they could do it. But we see guys over and over again have subpar seasons at this age. So there are no guarantees. I think they'll be good players. But it's not like you're getting guys like Pete Alonso who are in their prime years. Like, there are reasons where you could suggest a drop-off in the next couple of years could be coming for both of them. Pat?
Yeah, in just the way they're kind of going about business with these aging guys, shorter deals, it does make you kind of think that the potential lockout might be affecting how they're perceiving free agents in markets and that kind of stuff. Because one thing that I thought of after we got off recording the other day. Next year, you have Sonny Gray's money off the books, which that's going into the lockout. The year of the lockout, so after the 2027 season, this means nothing because, I mean, look where we are now. We haven't signed a free agent. That being said, the money coming off the books after 27 is Story, Contreras, and Yoshida. Those three all come off the books at the same time, right after the lockout. So they're not going to say it. I mean, even to beat guys, I don't think they're going to openly admit that the looming lockout is affecting their approach. But it's hard not to think that, especially with the money that's already coming off after the lockout.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Yeah, one other thing too, money-wise. Pat, you brought it up like a few minutes ago, but like we talk about the Red Sox needing the Cardinals to eat money, needing them to eat the $8 million, being annoyed at how they're operating. There is an equal chance here that the Cardinals said, listen, we're not trading this guy to just dump him. Like, we want to get value. If we have to eat money to get value, we will. But like, we're not just trading this dude who doesn't want to waive his no trade clause and is a good teammate and a good leader. Like, he can be valuable to us. We're not just going to dump him for money. So you're going to give us value. If we have to eat money, we will. Like, I'm totally open to that being a possibility of what happened. And to be honest with you, I feel like it honestly is more likely than the Red Sox insisting that money gets eaten. I'm curious if that's what happened. Does that change your guys? Because it changes my perspective of it a little bit, but only if they just are obsessed with Contreras. But I just, there's no way for me to know if he was their plan A for their other bat. I wish I could know.
Makes me feel a little bit better, but money is the last thing I would want in return if I'm the Red Sox, but they care about that. I would rather just say, give me a reliever. Give me what? Jojo Romero. Give me a catching prospect. There's Red Sox are still looking for those guys. Give me some low minors guy who I like the upside of. I'd rather that than get the $8 million. But then again, when you're Craig Breslow, you're operating under a budget. Maybe you do have to go after the $8 million. And that's why I'm not mad at Breslow for this. I think people think I'm upset with him for being creative. I'm upset with the fact that he has to get creative. I don't think he should have to get creative. When you're the Boston Red Sox, you're owned by a $14 billion with a B dollar company. You shouldn't be needing to take on $8 million. I mean, like, what's that to someone who's a multi-billionaire, who owns a multi-billion dollar company? It's just there's no way that this can be spun where I'm going to be okay with the Red Sox setting this budget, building this team any other way than something. I'm not going to say the Dodgers, but teams like the Blue Jays or the Mets who really spend money, the Yankees, teams like that who really spend a lot of money. It's not insane like Los Angeles, but it's doable. For the Red Sox, absolutely doable. And I'm not willing to hear anyone who says otherwise. There's no argument for it. Like the Red Sox could absolutely operate like the Mets, Blue Jays, Yankees. They just don't. So when I see the $8 million, again, my eyes roll out of my head. I can't. There's no way it could be spun where I have any other reaction.
Yeah, and if they spend a ton of other money, then it's like it's a different conversation, but we just haven't seen it yet. And by a ton of other money, I mean beyond a Bregman or a Bichette. Like getting that guy and then, oh, we saved money here so we can sign this bigger money reliever that maybe we weren't going to be able to before.
Yeah, the other thing too is they're not taking money on like these insane contracts. Like this isn't when Arenado went to St. Louis and they ate some of the contract. This isn't when A-Rod went to the Yankees and Texas ate some. Like these are like 1 to 2 year deals in the $20 to $30 million range. Like these are not contracts that you should feel as though you need to take money back to make a deal work. It's crazy. It's insane.
Yeah. So I mean I really hope just for the sake of how the Red Sox are going to operate in the future that that it was the Cardinals saying, listen, we need a young starter. Like, we really like Dobbins. How can we make this work? Because if it's just a dump, because to me, Contreras' salary alone wasn't going to net them much of a return. Them eating the money was what was able to get them a return. I hope the Cardinals were the ones who told the Red Sox, like, this is the way it's got to be. But and the other, you go ahead, Sammy.
Yeah, sorry, one last thing. I just want to reiterate, I think Contreras is awesome. And we're all excited that he is on the Boston Red Sox in a vacuum. This is a guy who can hit, like Pat said, he has a good swing for Fenway, pulls the ball in the air a lot, hits the ball hard. Just good defense. Gordo loves first base defense. He's always talking first base defense. No, I'm kidding, but it is a bonus. It's always good to have a good defender at any spot, so I'll take that. I'm excited to have him. He is not the reason I'm annoyed. It's the operating, the way it was done. I feel like I keep repeating that, and it still goes over people's heads, so I want to make that abundantly clear. Big fan of Contreras.
So before I bring up, because I want to talk Casas and Yoshida, I want to get there, because obviously, when the Red Sox add a new bat that doesn't play second or third base, those are the two guys that it impacts the most. First, though, how many home runs does Wilson Contreras hit this season? Understanding that he's playing first base full time, there's no catcher. It's the second year he's going to be doing that. And Fenway Park, hopefully, you know, Pat referenced his increased air pull percentage last year. Hopefully, he can bring that to Fenway Park and set a career high in home runs. Does he set that career high next year? Do you guys think that?
What's his current career high? Let me go to the
I think it's 24.
I believe it's 24, and that was going to be my prediction. That's my prediction. I think he hits 24 this year.
That's funny. I was also going to say, well, I'll go a little lower. I'll say 22.
Oh, wow. Am I going to go the highest? I was going to say sets a career high and hits 27.
Oh,
I just have a really good season.
I hope I'm wrong here.
I think I have a really good season. It's not like, it's not the 30 home runs that I wanted the Red Sox to acquire. But I do think he's going to have a really good season. So shout out Wilson Contreras. Excited to see how that one goes. Like, we're going to have a couple of moments this year where he makes fans fall in love, because he's got temper. He goes crazy. So
I think he's going to be fun. Yeah, he's a fiery guy. What was that quote where he's I think he misspoke. English is a second language. He's like, we could fuck any other team. He definitely didn't mean to say that, but it was funny. I think he's going to hit a billion doubles. I think he's going to pepper the monster all year long. I know he lifts the ball in the air a lot, but the monster still knocks him down a ton. So that's what I'm excited for. He's going to be extra base hit machine, whether it's a home run, double, maybe even a triple here and there.
Pat? So real quick, just on the note of projections. So I just looked up his Steamer and his Fangraphs projections. There's a big disparity, because Steamer, for some reason, only has him playing 108 games, but Fangraphs projects him to play 141. So for the sake of this, we'll go with the 141. Following the trade to Boston, he is projected to hit 25 home runs, which would be a career high, 81 RBI, and 28 doubles. So, I mean, if that's
25
true...
25 home runs projected? I kind of feel bad about my prediction. I might want to adjust and go up. I was going to say 24, but I didn't want to have the same guess as you. So I'll go 24. That's my official prediction. I'm with you, Pat.
I mean, it's so much about if he's going to stay healthy, because most of these, like, what his, he hasn't reached 140 games in his career yet, right? And granted,
no, but a lot of
he's
that
gotten hurt,
does
but he's a catcher.
I mean, he played 138 in 2018. He played 135 in 2025. If you get 135 games out of Contreras at his age, I think that's pretty good. You want more, but that's not the end of the world, especially when you have suitable fill-in candidates like Romy Gonzalez if a lefty's in. So
Tristan Casas
maybe.
Let's get there. The Casas element of this and the Yoshida one, but let's start with Casas. So fascinating, because the Red Sox, obviously, to me, we're going to have, first of all, I don't think at this point that either of them is going to get traded. Do you guys think either of these guys is getting traded? If either of them was going to go, it was going to be Casas at this point. Like, I think Massa is legitimately safe, which is crazy. I did not think it was going to be that coming in. But I think they're both safe, and Yoshida is safer.
If I were to guess, yeah, I don't think Yoshida is going to move. I think we and everyone else might have underestimated how hard it is to move that much money with a lockout looming. That's definitely playing a factor. How could that not be playing a factor if a team's considering taking on Yoshida? Costas, I don't know, because there's always the chance that a team just is enamored with him and wants to not buy low, but pay a fair price. And the Red Sox are like, oh, shit, you're willing to give us that for Costas after what happened to him? Sure. But I would err on the side of no, he's likely safe and he's probably going to be that like AAA and or DH type to start the season.
Who do you think has more market value right now?
Costas for sure.
Costas.
She does negative.
Just because, yeah, the money, the lack of money.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think it's Costas. But dude, the injuries, what he looked like when he was playing last year, it's not even worth trading him at this
exactly.
point.
Probably not. That's what I'm saying is like, you would have to have a team that saw him. When was his big season? 2023.
He hit like 24 home runs, hit 260.
Right.
Second pick.
One, like one 20 of the something OPS. One, yeah. Yeah.
Can you believe how far removed we are from Costas being like a scary middle of the order bat? It's been a while and he's not even old yet. It's just 25. Been a strange start to the season or to the career of Tristan Costas. We've spoken about him plenty on this show. He's been awesome to talk to, awesome guy for content, very funny. I know people have mixed reviews on him. He's not your traditional baseball player, but I don't understand how people couldn't like him. He's talented too. So I think it's fair to say we're all rooting for the guy. It's just like, you have no clue what to expect. The dude's knee exploded on the field.
The other thing too with Costas is like, let's say he does a pan out, because he had some lofty projections. Like people were saying he was Freeman-esque. But like his floor, even at this current day, is like the Miguel Sano, Josh Bell type, which Josh Bell's still in the league. Like that, it's not a bum. He might not be a top 15, 20 first baseman, but there's room in the league for a guy like Costas, even at his absolute worst. So in that sense, it's worth keeping him to build a little bit of value at least.
Yeah.
And not to mention having depth. Like we talk about having all this pitching depth, but now you're in a position where Masa Yoshida, who has not been healthy in his career and has also underperformed for most of his career, and then Wilson Contreras, who has not been healthy for his pretty much entire career, both of these guys, you've got a legitimate good backup option. And yes, I agree, he probably is the odd man out of those three going into opening day. But that's okay. Like, you don't want to rush this guy off of this knee injury for opening day. So that's not a bad place to be. Here's what Breslow had to say. He said, we still have a ton of confidence and belief in Tristan. Then he went on to say he was great in our conversation and understood that this was a chance for the organization to take a step forward. So good for Breslow having a conversation with the dude who is going to see this move and understand, okay,
wow.
I've got an uphill battle for a job. Now, I thought exactly what you're thinking, Sammy.
Growth, but, man. Breslow's learning. They reprogrammed his AI.
But it was still after. But I don't think you owe Costas the same kind of respect that you owed Raffy. Like,
no.
Costas has not been paid. He's not been told you will be playing this position for years to come. No, like, he's on a rookie deal. He has played under 100 games combined the last two seasons. I think I've got that right. I think it's in the 90s. So, yeah, you don't own the same thing. But I'm glad that, or I shouldn't say that because he could get traded still. But I think they should keep him around because I do think that he deserves an opportunity to take a job at some point. And if he's going to be the player that I have certainly thought he would be for the last like 2-3 years. Then at some point in time, he's going to be a staple in this lineup. It's just that you shouldn't count on that in April.
Yeah. The other thing too with Costas is there's not even a guarantee that he's like green light for the regular season. Like it's similar to the Raffy situation in the sense that you basically just got a guy's, I wouldn't even call it a replacement, like a guy who is going to play your position. But Costas is, there's no guarantee he's ready for spring training. There's no guarantee that he doesn't start in AAA to at least rehab it, get back to where he needs to be. The Raffy thing, you signed his replacement. He was making $30 million, and he said, ooh, yeah. Sorry about that, pal. So it's different, but it's encouraging that he at least pulled Costas aside, even if it was after the fact, and just say, hey, like, I'm not blind to how you might feel. I want to have a conversation with you, blah, 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 blah. And it went well. Everything went smoothly. That's all you could ask for after the Raffy drama.
Yeah, my initial comment about Brezza was tongue-in-cheek, but I do think it is a good thing that he's communicating with his players. That was the knock on him, and, you know, he comes off a bit robotic in his interviews, so, you know, it's progress. He's a human. Promise. He is a human, like us, so he's growing, and you have to think about his GM experience is very minimal compared to most of the guys in his position, so yeah, the Devers thing was a disaster, but it's good to see him at least changing the way he operates.
That's the crazy thing about, and I know the Red Sox certainly explored their options for GMs and didn't get a lot of bites, but that's the crazy thing about hiring a guy who hadn't been a number one or a number two in that role. Like, he's learning on the fly. It's why having a guy like Theo Epstein around should be such a valuable sounding board, but you're going to make mistakes on the job. You just got to hope you don't make the big ones. And I mean, the Rafi one, the whole situation there was a big one. There's no denying that, but it's about how you move forward. And even though Contreras isn't long-term money, he is replacing Rafi's bat. So how Wilson plays the next two seasons, it's gonna be a big part of the Devers story.
Mm-hmm. God, yeah, that kind of is frustrating to think about when you ruminate on how good this team could have been had they handled the Devers situation better, had they went after a more aggressive number two starter, had they brought back Bregman already, had they maybe added to the bullpen. There's just so many little things. Actually, not even little. There's just so many things that the Red Sox could have done to make us all feel better about the team heading into 2026 that they have not done. So, again, it feels like this team is going to be good. It's just they could have been so much better, and we're not even in January and we're already talking like this. Like, that's not where I thought we'd be at this point in the offseason. I thought we'd be talking about, holy shit, Joe Ryan, holy shit, Mackenzie Gore, what can he become, pitching behind Crochet, Bregman's back, oh my God, Pete Alonso. You get none of those.
Yeah, the other thing too is with the moves that have already been made, and again, this is pending Bregman being back. So in this scenario, Bregman is back. They are a better team than they were last year. I think that is fact. That being said, I think they're an 89-win team to a 91-win team. When in reality, we thought they were going to go big. The Alonso bring Bregman back, number two, and you were talking about a 95-96-win team. They are better. Like, I'm not shitting on any moves they have made so far because they have made this team better pending bringing back Bregman or bringing in Bichette. But it is such a minuscule better team to me.
So you go ahead, Sammy.
I was just going to say, this sucks. My favorite move so far has been password for Oviedo, which should not be anyone's favorite move, but that is my favorite one so far. I think Oviedo's got awesome upside. He's an absolute moose, 6'6", 275, like legitimately gigantic dude pitching. And I didn't think password was that great of a prospect. So I like that swap, but that after you win 89 games and make the playoffs, we should not be talking about how much we love this depth starting pitcher trade that you got for a fringe prospect. It's just so Tampa Bay Rays and so not Boston Red Sox.
Can I inject a little bit of optimism here? Just a scenario.
Ugh, God. Optimism?
So, yeah.
Shoot me up, brother.
They can't go into the season with all four outfielders and Massa.
No way.
One of those guys has to go. And to me, I think the obvious call here is DH is there for Massa, and you trade one of the outfielders if a deal of anywhere close to value is there, which based off of the prices that some of these controllable, solid players, outfielders, starters, like, I know they're different markets, but like controllable good players have been going for a big price this offseason. So I think that deal is going to be there. What if, and I know we keep talking like the rotation's complete because Breslow's talking like the rotation is complete, but they still do have to get something for one of those outfielders is what I'm getting at. So there is a chance here that Duran goes in a deal that brings them back a number two starter. And then it gets to the point where Sammy brought up like, oh, if the offseason is Bregman and Contreras and Sonny, like what would you have said after the Yankee series? And my response to that was, well, if they're going to underwhelm in one area, they have to overwhelm in another. If they get a number two starter and Sonny Gray, and then the offense was Bregman coming back, and then they didn't get like the Pete Alonso 35 home run bat that I wanted to see them get, but they still got a good player in Contreras. That's still an offseason that you can hang your hat on and be like, okay, this team is really going for it. But obviously two big moves would have to happen to get there, getting Bregman and then finding a Duran trade that gets you that number two, which is far from a guarantee.
Yeah, that's totally an option. I think that there's multiple suitors for Duran. I think the main suitor for, there's a few. I think Kansas City makes a lot of sense. That's a team that you could get starting pitching from. I think Reagans is going to be very tough to get, but Chris Bubich, another good option, even though he's on an expiring deal. Cincinnati has a surplus of pitching. They would love Duran. San Diego, I don't think you're going to get starting pitching from. So there's options, but they're kind of few and far between. And I don't feel super confident in Craig Breslow when he's backed into a corner. A lot of that has to do with the trade deadline stuff. He has not performed well at the trade deadline. That's one of the most high-pressure situations. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but him being under pressure to move. Everyone knows that the Red Sox have to move Duran or Abreu or Yoshida. Like, they have to move one of those three. I'm fine keeping Duran, but it has to be because Yoshida's gone. You can't keep all of them. So with those few things in mind, yes, Gordo, that scenario is plausible. I'm just not supremely confident it's going to happen. I think we... God, you guys will hate this. I think we're going to be a bit underwhelmed with the Jaren Duran trade just because that has been the theme of the Craig Breslow era, aside from Garrett Crochet. And I would lump the Alex Bregman signing in there because that was a one-year deal in the end. That's not a real big needle mover.
Yeah, Gordon, to go back to what you just said, I totally agree. I think they're the most slept on because everyone's expecting the offense to be like, you go way above and beyond. That being said, walk with me here. Let's say you'd say, we'll use Cincinnati. Let's say you trade Duran to Cincinnati in, you know, whatever package it is, and you get a guy like Nick Lodolo back. If that is the route they go with Jaren Duran, that is when I think the quietly shopping Brian Bello thing comes in. Because then you flip Bello. You get a return for Bello. Who knows what it is? I don't care. But you're now talking about a rotation of Crochet, Lodolo, Gray, Oviedo, probably early. And then you have upgraded the offense by bringing Bregman back and bringing in Contreras. That rotation is as legit gets. So, if they go above and beyond with the rotation and they kind of marginally upgrade the offense, agree. You can totally hang your hat on that because you are indisputably better. The rotation on paper is a top 5-7 in baseball, and the offense is well above average.
That it's an interesting thing to think about with Bayo because, yeah, there was that report from Rosenthal, Will Salmon, that Sox are maybe quietly shopping Brian Bayo. I don't know. Like they also kind of refuted their report in there with another one. It was weird. To me, if that's the route you go, Pat, and you bring in Lodolo, but you trade Bayo, I don't think starting pitching wise you're any better. So in the end, it really is just, yeah, I think Bayo was better last year than Lodolo, but I think in the end, you're better in the sense of what you got for Bayo. But if they bring in, and I also wouldn't want to see them get like a Freddy Peralta and then trade Bayo, because now you're losing Peralta and Sonny at the end of the year. Like if they're trading Bayo, to me, like the only guys I would be considering for that would be studs with more than 2 years of control. Really, it's to me, it's just Reagans. It would have to be a package with him, and that's the only way I'd consider. I don't want them trading Bayo.
You could send Duran and Bayo to Kansas City along with a prospect and see if they'll give you Reagans. Dude. That would be a friggin' massive blockbuster. I'd be down. Thumbs up.
I love Reagans. I always love Reagans.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
He's a beast, man. But yeah, that, I mean, that would be the kind of scenario where, like, all right, the offense isn't quite what we thought, but look at this rotation. You got Crochet, Reagan's at the top, and then Sonny Gray's your three, and then you have Oviedo and a combination of Early, Toley, Harrison, all those young guys that go on and on.
Sandoval.
Sandoval, yeah, they have 95 young pitchers right now. Like, it's great. And also, Yoshida, for all the negative things I've said about the guy, if the DH spot is open, that's not a bad scenario where he takes that role, at least temporarily, until you can move him, we say, for like the third year in a row. Like, he's not a bad player. So that would be, in my eyes, that would be acceptable.
And not for nothing, having the option of Yoshida and Casas, having those two deke it out in spring training, if Yoshida underperforms, you can go to, like, one of those guys you have to feel good about. And I know we hate going down that road of, oh, if you have this option, this option, this option, and this option, then a couple of them are bound to work. Like, I know we hate having those conversations, but Yoshida and Casas are dudes that we've seen have success. Yoshida was your best hitter in September and the postseason. So it's not crazy to think that, hey, those guys being your two DH candidates, that's not a bad place to be.
The problem with that, I don't like the idea of them fighting it out in spring training, because what you're not going to learn anything about Yoshida. You know who he is. It's a matter of, is he healthy or is he not? And it's almost the same thing with Tristan Casas. It's just, is he healthy or is he not healthy? I think you have to pick one and be like, we're going to prioritize this guy. I think I would go with Yoshida, just because with Casas, that knee thing is nuts. Like, that is you rarely see injuries like that in Major League Baseball. So I don't know if it makes sense to have them, like, how'd you describe it, deke it out in spring training? Like, I get where you're coming from. I just, with those two guys, I don't think it makes sense. It's like, who's healthy? If there were two young guys who were prospects at a similar position and you thought they were relatively equal and you want to see who performed better against big league pitching, sure. I just don't know if that's how I would do it in this situation. Though I do understand the logic you're coming with, Gordo.
Well, no, actually, I agree wholeheartedly with where you're coming from, because also Yoshida doesn't have options. So if you want to give Casas that spot, now it's like, okay, we have Masa on the bench and he doesn't really provide value off the bench. It's sort of just, he's waiting for someone, particularly Casas or Contreras, to get hurt, or he's there to spell them on an off day. Like, it's not an ideal scenario, but no, to me, if Casas is hitting the shit out of the ball, I'm not going to keep him out of the lineup. But Yoshida is going to have the upper hand in spring training for all the reasons you said and for what I just said. But if Yoshida hits 215, he's got a high 600s OPS, Casas is in AAA hitting the shit out of the ball. Like no, he's going to be up, and he's going to be my DH by the end of April.
So I guess it's more like deke it out in terms of who is healthy. That's got to get you fired up.
Casas has to dramatically outperform Yoshida to earn that job early. Yeah, that goes without saying.
He would have to do something nuts. I agree.
Can you imagine how easy life would be if Masataka Yoshida was right-handed?
Oh, I was just thinking that.
If he was right-handed, just platoon the two of them at DH. Just throw Casas over at first every now and then. Yoshida DHs. I agree, Gordo. I think going into spring training, I think Casas, I mean, obviously has the higher ceiling, and I think he'll eventually win that full-time DH job, or, you know, Contreras there, whatever it may be. But the investment you made in Yoshida, coupled with the fact that Casas' health is a major question mark, Casas is going to have to rake in spring training, and Yoshida is going to have to prove that he's just not good or not ready. So I think to start the year, I think Yoshida ends up being that DH guy up until Casas gets his footing in AAA, figures it out. But I might be on the other end of the spectrum. I don't think they'll have any qualms about pulling the plug on Yoshida DH if Casas is hitting the hell out of the ball.
Yeah. The other thing I want to get your guys' take on, I made my feelings known about it on Twitter. The Brendan Donovan rumor, which Rosenthal and Salmon reported in the same article as the Bayo thing. And I think that Katie Wu contributed, so this probably came from her too. But there was the Red Sox and Cardinals have discussed a deal that would send Brendan Donovan to the Red Sox. It would be the third trade between Breslow and Heim of the offseason. To me, this report coming out a day after acquiring Contreras, it sounds my alarm bells as maybe this would have been something they considered before adding Contreras. And I'm not sure how much, if any, of those discussions happened after Contreras, which is the only time that they would matter. Because to me, now that you've acquired Contreras, and you like Brandon Donovan only made sense to me if they got Pete Alonso or if they got Eugenio Suarez, 49 home runs, signed
Schwarber.
Schwarber. Yes. Thank you, Pat. Schwarber. Like any of these giant power bats, because Brandon Donovan's career high in home runs is 14. To me, like at this point with where we're at right now, not a fit. And he's going to cost a ton. Like it might take a Marcelo Meyer. It might take a Franklin Arias plus to get this guy.
So people I was talking to were like, oh, but like Donovan, great player. I don't think people, I shouldn't generalize like that. There are some people out there. I don't think there's a good comprehension on just how much Brendan Donovan is going to cost in a trade.
Yeah.
He hit 287 with 10 home runs. So you're like, oh yeah, like that's a solid player. Really good defense. He's basically, this is underselling how good Brendan Donovan is, but like Luis Arias with defense and speed, which that's the two things that Luis Arias doesn't have. So that being said, this is option B to the very obvious Ketel Marte A for every team across the league looking to add a middle infielder, a third baseman, I guess an outfielder too. I think he's a better second baseman. But once there's a bidding war on a guy like Donovan, you're going to get really uncomfortable with how big of a price that is. And agree with you, Gordo. If they got Alonso, if they got Schwarber, absolutely. Shore up the defense, get a good contact guy, guy who doesn't strike out, walks a little bit. Absolutely. Contreras was the complimentary bat. You now need a bigger bat than Donovan, and that is a Bregman or a Bichette.
Here's the thing with Donovan. If you get Donovan, he, looking at it now, almost has to play third base because his defense at second is not great. It's not terrible. It's just not great. His offense is enough to make up for it. Defense at third is over his career where he's thrived, but he hasn't played there as much lately. Didn't play there at all in 2025. Shortstop, he's not good. Outfield, so. He's really only had one standout defensive year, and it kind of looks like an outlier. So even the defense, which everyone always says defense never slumps, I'm not 100% sold on that. And if he's not giving you plus defense, I'm not talking about good. He has to be great defensively. Then the bat is just not enough. And he did have a good season offensively this year. He had a 119 OPS plus, which is around Jaron Duran's down year, what he had. But this guy doesn't have a lot of power. He doesn't have a lot of speed. And if his defense isn't good, who does that sound like? Masataka Yoshida. So I'm all good. I think he's a good ball player. I think there are fits for him. I don't think the Red Sox should make a move for him. It doesn't make sense to me.
Seattle. Perfect fit for him. Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also just the fact that the Red Sox, I mean, I know that they haven't traded their best assets per se, but they've made a lot of trades and they've traded a lot of organizational depth and they've traded starting pitching depth. They just did it for Contreras. So to me, I just, even Marte, like I would love it if they got the guy. I just don't think a trade right now, especially when they've gotten the Cardinals to eat money on Sonny Gray, they've gotten the Cardinals to eat money on Wilson Contreras. Like, you can afford to make a big financial splash. You could even call it an overpay. You can afford to go there. So you don't get the same value getting a guy like Marte or Donovan that's cost controlled, because once you get those guys, like, there's no other spots in the lineup or in the rotation right now to overpay. Like, you're not using those savings to your advantage anymore. So to me, like, Bregman, Bichette, like, those are the two, and it just should be Bregman. And I feel like they feel like the, like, everything leveled out. Like, there was that panic for like 2-4 days, and now we're all kind of right back on where we were, which is a good place to be. Like, they should get Alex Bregman.
My question is, where else is he going to go? I'll keep coming back to the same thing. Where else is he going to go? And don't say the Cubs. Everyone keeps saying the Cubs, like Matt Shaw. Even I, like, when we spoke about him a few weeks ago, I was like, yeah, Matt Shaw's okay. He's better than I thought. Over 3 WAR in his rookie season. So say what you want about him. He's good. I don't think the Cubs are a fit. Tigers, he already rejected. Who else? We've spoken about the Nationals as a sleeper. That's super unlikely, even if you do like that fit. Where else is he going to go? Blue Jays?
Dude,
I don't think so.
It's also just where is he going to want to go? It's like not even just which teams could potentially offer him the money. It's if the Red Sox actually want to bring this guy back, which team is going to not just outbid them, but outbid them by enough to make him pick somewhere else.
Out of all the teams I just said, I think maybe the Blue Jays might be the biggest threat. And I don't even think they're a threat. I think they're going to go after Kyle Tucker. I think that's going to be their guy, or Bo Bichette. I think Bregman is probably their third option. Imagine living in a world where Bregman's your third option. Sounds like your team is pretty good. Probably won the pennant the year prior. Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Jays, dude. You guys want to be a Blue Jays podcast instead?
Third option after already getting Cease, too. Yeah. Oh,
yeah, but dude, Cease is going to stink in 2031, so fucking who really won that one?
And Taylor Rogers? Tyler Rogers?
The submarine one.
Tyler.
Yeah.
I love and how the Blue Jays
and
have...
And Cody Ponce.
Yeah, hey, he's cool. The poop guy. I like him. Yeah, I like how the Blue Jays have Trey Savage with the highest release point and then Rogers with the lowest release point. That's going to be a pain in the ass, especially in October. That's a great, great October weapon.
Watching that video of them overlaid was nuts.
Yeah.
Like, that was crazy.
Pitching. Shout out Pitching Ninja. Love that guy.
Yeah. All right, let's get to enough said. I'll go first because we didn't talk about this at all, but Rob Refsnyder, one-year deal, not with the Red Sox, to the Seattle Mariners, Sammy's favorite team. I loved the Refsnyder experience. Having a platoon dude who just hit the absolute shit out of left-handed pitching for years on this team, having a team that didn't have the best right-handed hitters, the best guys to hit left-handed pitching, like up until this past year, like they got Bregman. Before that, it was like, okay, like Tyler O'Neill's that their best right-handed hitter because Trevor Story's just not on the field. Having Rob Refsnyder was able to kind of like mask that, and with him and Romy Gonzalez last year for a period of time, like they were able to hit lefties better than righties, which was shocking if you watched the last couple of years of Red Sox baseball. A leader on this team, a clubhouse presence, like a guy that teammates looked up to, like he was a veteran presence, and he did a ton for the organization. And it just sucked that, you know, it felt like the writing was on the wall. We talked about it on this podcast, but when they said that they wanted Willie to play every day, Rob Refsnyder is not going to be on a team as a traditional bench piece. Like, no, he's going to be a left-handed platoon or right-handed platoon guy to hit lefties. So Nate Eaton makes more sense as a traditional bench piece. He's better on defense. He's faster. He can come off the bench in situations. Whereas Refsnyder, you're going to want him to be a platoon. So it's too bad that it couldn't continue. The Red Sox just weren't going to pay $6-7 million. Damn, I just did it. Shit. They weren't going to pay. They weren't going to pay $6-7 million. But yeah, shout out to Refsnyder. Posted a cool video and a cool message to Sox fans. I mean, his career really took off in Boston, so I know it meant a lot to him. Pat?
One name that you did not say, because Eaton is the outfield fit, obviously. Once Ref signed, I was like, okay, they must be pretty sold on Eaton. I think the guy who just secured a job next year is Nick Sogard. Sogard hit .371 in 35 at-bats against lefties this year with an 857 OPS. And that's a guy who
did
plays
not
everywhere.
Realize that.
Same. Wow. And Nate Eaton wasn't even that great against lefties this year.
No, he
Nate
wasn't.
Eaton this year, I think he hit like .260. I have it right here. Against
he also
lefties.
Outperformed his like projected stats. He big time outperformer of those, so kind of take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Roughly the same at bats. Sogard was 35, Eaton is 43. He hit .279 with a .673 OPS. So he can make contact against lefties. But Sogard, I think, is a legit lefty killer in the making, which is encouraging.
In terms of Refsnyder, I'm actually out here in Seattle as we record, and I've had a few people ask me, like, who is this guy? What should I think? And I've had nothing but good things to say about Rob Refsnyder. The Mariners have a similar problem to what the Red Sox have had, in that they don't hit lefties well. So he's a great fit. I saw some Mariners fans projecting him to be signed by Seattle. So good call if you had that. Just an awesome bench piece. He's not a massive needle mover, but you never know when you need a lefty masher, especially when you just faced Tarek Skubal in the playoffs. Like, how many times? Two times, I think they faced him. Four times in total all year for the Mariners. So, yeah, Ref Steiner, I think all the Mariners fans listening to Play Tessie, you're going to love him.
All right, Pat, you got enough said?
Yeah, so normally I go with like football, something else around baseball. Every now and then I have a personal anecdote. Today's a personal anecdote. My grandparents are going fucking crazy, man. I got a text from my grandmother today that said, Merry Christmas. We're recording on the 23rd. And I'm like, that's a little bit odd because I see them on Christmas. So I'm like, oh, mate, like maybe I'm not seeing them this year, whatever. So I don't think much of it. I'm like, that's odd. So then I get a text from my brother, and my brother goes, did anyone else just get a text from Grammy and Papa saying Merry Christmas? I'm like, yeah. I was like, why is she texting everybody this? So I talked to my mom, and she called my mom, and they're talking, blah, blah, blah. And my grandmother ends the phone call with, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. And my mom goes, what? She goes, tomorrow for Christmas. And my mom goes, today's the 23rd. And my grandmother goes, no, today's Christmas Eve. Me and your dad already, we just swapped presents. I got everything cooked for dinner tomorrow. And my mom goes, mom, it's the 23rd. She looks at the calendar. She made all of her food for Christmas today.
Rich.
Swapped presents with my grandfather today and texted all of her grandkids thinking today was Christmas Eve.
Whoops. Wow.
Yeah, like, I was laughing my ass off. Like, she's going full-blown crazy. Both of them.
Yeah, that's...
Because the other part of it, my grandfather's home. Like, he can tell her, hey, it's the 23rd. Same page, man. Christmas Eve.
You should just placate them. Just placate them and be like, yep, we're doing it. And just have Christmas the night early.
Insane.
Good grandson. Yeah. That I didn't know. Dude, Grammy and Papa. That's what I say the same thing, too. I think you're the first person I've ever heard.
I got a Grammy and a Papa, and I've got a grandma.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, I wish them the best. I hope they have a good actual Christmas.
Two Christmases. Lucky them.
Hope the food stays good.
Two Christmases. My enough said, I went for the first time to a Boston Fleet game, PWHL, women's hockey. They happen to be out here in Seattle while I'm here playing the Seattle. Can't really remember the name of Seattle team, but they beat them. They whooped them pretty easily. And I had a really good time. It was freaking awesome. I did not realize the speed. Women's hockey is very fun. Highly recommend it. I was like the one asshole Boston fan in the stands. I had my Dunkin' Donuts colored Boston jersey. Shout out to Sean Palmer for designing that one. But yeah, really good time. I highly recommend it. I'm going to go to a game in Boston, so I'm not the only one rooting for the Fleet. And yeah, just shout out to them. That was a lot of fun.
I think Joe's got enough said too before we get out of here. Joe,
Christmas,
Joe,
you got something?
Hi guys. Mine's kind of sort of on the line of Pat, not necessarily that anecdote, but Christmas related. As someone who can't rap for shit, rap presents, I mean, this Christmas, do not judge how your gift looks.
You can't rap.
I should have just started rapping instead. Yeah, but if you're getting Christmas gifts this year, do not judge the people and their rapping skills, because some of them are not very good at it. So dude, just Joe, quick
thank
PSA.
You.
Quick thank PSA. You.
Same boat, Joe. I suck at wrapping gifts. I've been trying. I try every year when I come out here for Christmas. I try to rap, but I'm just not good at it. I don't have the patience and the technique that it takes.
Do you guys remember the way I wrapped Marcelo's gift? It was one side, it looked super flat, super clean. When we took a picture of it, it looked good, and you flip it over and it's just a disaster on the other.
It looks like you made one mistake and then gave up and were like, oh, screw this, and crumble it and cover it with tape.
Just for imaging purposes over audio, when you have a loaf of bread without the tie, you know how like you spin it and fold it underneath? I am fully convinced Gordo unrolled an entire roll of wrapping paper, just kind of brought it over up over the top like a knapsack, spun it, and then just taped it down. It looked so shitty.
Listen, all that mattered was the picture, man.
And next time we get a gift, inside. We got to, between the four of us, figure out who's the best rapper, because it ain't me and it ain't Gordo.
Yeah, next time Gordo wraps a present, I'll take a picture of the undercarriage.
Yeah.
All right. No.
All right.
Oh.
Great. One more word.
Seattle Torrent. Excuse me. Sorry to that team. I forgot their name. It's the Seattle Torrent. Mm. Boston Fleet beat the Seattle Torrent. Sorry.
Shout out to the Torrent. It's like one of those names like the Trenton Thunder, like where it's just a word. No S.
Fleet.
Boston Fleet. Wow.
Actually, I was going through the league and there were a lot of teams like that. I noticed that and I made the same observation. It's very weird. We made the same one. So great minds, as design. They say.
All right. That's going to do it, though. Episode 299, Play Testy. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Play Testy, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo. Happy holidays. We'll be back. We'll have a Who Says No for you guys dropping on Friday. The 26th? Friday the 26th. So we'll be back. Till then, thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.